Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm very excited to have with us on the show Michael Timmis. Michael is a senior human resource specialist with Insperity. In his role, Michael provides strategic HR guidance and coaching to Insperity clients seeking to develop their human capital. His specialty areas include employee relations, coaching, talent acquisition, career development, and performance management. Michael holds a master's degree in human resources management from Rutgers University and a certified personal coaching designation from the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching. He is also the current president of the Jersey Shore Association for Human Resources, a society for human resource management. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure. I love this topic that we had discussed doing on the show today about what are the five critical tips that recent graduates need to know when it comes to finding their dream job. How did you get into this subject matter, and how did this become an area that you specialized in?
Well, it's interesting. For the past couple of years, I frequent Barnes & Noble a lot, and around May and June, they do such a wonderful job of putting together a table of books for graduates, high school and college. And I noticed that there were a number of books on there, some of which I've read and spoken about with other people. And some of them go back for a number of years that have really stood the test of time. And I just said, this is such a great idea and gift for people who were stepping out of college and into the workforce to continue their development and put them in such a good position to find a position with an organization that aligns with what they would like to achieve in life.
I think it's so important. It was funny. I was talking to my neighbors this morning, and one of my neighbors just mentioned to me, Jennifer, you know, I just had to leave a job because I no longer found fulfillment in it. And it's so funny that we spend tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on education and on how to think and how to write, but nobody teaches us how to find a job or what we need to know before we get out there into the real world.
I think the colleges and universities do a good job to try and get folks in the position to understand the things that they should be looking at. Yet, whether you're first out of school or whether, like I've been in that position a number of times, it's a continual learning experience. And the more we spend time reflecting based on what we're doing and then interviewing or just reading up on things, we become more aware of where we have the opportunity to enhance ourselves. I think, and it was interesting because somebody pointed this out to me, even as HR professionals, we sometimes forget that we have our own personal brand and we really have to become comfortable at understanding it and then being able to promote it so that other people can realize and understand the value that we can bring to an organization as well.
I think it's so important. And how did you find what you wanted to do? What was it about human resources that drew you into that profession?
It's interesting because you talked about changing careers. When I went to school, I always wanted to work in the hospitality industry. And my undergraduate degree, I had an associate's in business administration. And then I got a four-year degree in commercial recreation and tourism because I wanted to work in the hotel industry. And shortly after I got into the hotel field, I was introduced into human resources. And I began to understand that this really connected with my core. So I had the opportunity to work under someone who is a controller, did a very good job of trying to guide me, but their main function was finance. So I decided that, hey, if I really wanted to do this, I had to go back to school and learn that skill myself. And the more I became entrenched in it, the more I found fulfillment in it, and I really felt like it was connected with my core. So it was an interesting journey because it's not something, if you would have asked me when I stepped out of school, that I would ever have seen myself doing.
Yeah, I think it's so important. That's why a friend of mine is about to go through a career transition herself. And I said, you know what, just go out and ask people, test it out, see if you can get internships, interview people who are in an industry that you might be interested in. And I think it's about kind of casting a wide net to see what really motivates you, because you might start off in school thinking that you're interested in social sciences or finance or any number of things, and then you get a degree and you get out of school, and then it turns out that your real passion lies somewhere else.
Yes. One of my colleagues who I work with, her background, she was a biology major and then became exposed to the human resource function and moved over into that. And again, another sense of fulfillment, really found connection with it. So it's interesting, though, that we do see the trends show that, you know, people probably change jobs, every 5 years. And now they predict that, you know, people coming out of school now could very well work for, you know, 50 to 60 years. So
wow.
You think about that. They could change jobs almost a dozen times. And in the course of that, they may actually change careers or professions twice. So it's retooling is consistent. I received an email from LinkedIn about a week or so ago, and it said that in 5 years, your skills could become obsolete. And the beauty of what we do in HR is that we work for such a wonderful organization that it reinvests in learning, and it's part of our core values. It's an ongoing process, learning, and we keep current on that. But it makes me think that, hey, I want to be part of this. There's so many exciting things going on. So the ability to do that, to go to conferences, to take on WebExes and webinars, whether it's internal or external with the organization, all that stuff helps to keep me current and helps me keep really on the cutting edge of what's going on in the field. And likewise, a lot of people that I speak to are the same way. They're continually looking to stay on top of their game.
Yeah, I think like you said, it's not just that you get out of school and you do one job for 30 or 40 years. Like I look at my parents and my dad, you know, right out of basically high school became a firefighter and did that for 35 years until he retired. And my mom was a nurse and same thing for 35 years. But I think that that's perhaps the generations past, and that the up and coming generations are much big picture, and they really want to try their hand at numerous different things. So I guess that's actually a good point to the recent grads out there. How important is it to choose that first job, or does it really not matter because you're going to do something different anyways?
Well, I think it's important to have a vision of where you would like to go. And what we see now, it starts even in the high schools. There's some great tools and resources where students have the ability to take these assessments to help them better understand where their interests lie, and then to really focus on finding a career that aligns with those interests. In the corporate world, we do a lot of stuff with the books. There's a book by Tom Rath. It's called Strength Finders 2.0 and Strength-Based Leadership for People Who Are in Leadership Roles. And taking those assessments helps you to understand where your top five strengths are and move more towards using them on a regular basis, because we're only going to make a shift in where somebody's areas of opportunities or growth are. I prefer to use those words in words like weaknesses. We're going to shift that a little. But when we can focus on having somebody use their strengths a lot, there's such a great opportunity for them to feel a higher level of engagement. So to your question, and this is where I think the first point on self-awareness comes in, if we take the time to become aware of what we'd like to do and then have the discipline to take those types of assessments, or to your point earlier, talk to people about what is it like to be in a position like that on a regular basis, what are the things you enjoy, where are the areas that you feel or different than what you thought it would be like when you entered that position, you begin to be able to paint a picture almost like with a blank broadcloth of what it's like. And the more that you can get a realistic preview of that, the more you're going to be able to find something that you're aligned with. Now, it may not be the first job. Sometimes we have to, you know, we take an opportunity and it doesn't seem to be what we think. But one of the coaching philosophies that we have is a purpose can be found in everything that happens. So even if it's not the perfect opportunity that we thought it would be, what can we learn from that that perhaps is going to stretch ourselves or give us something else in our toolkit so that we, the next time something comes up, we can step into that role and feel more confident that we're more aligned with our own personal mission and values.
Interesting. Okay, so you're saying that one of the steps to finding your ideal job, whether you're a recent college graduate or somebody out there about to explore something new, first starts by being self-aware?
It does. I think, and when we talk about awareness, it's really our ability to perceive our emotions and stay aware of them as they're happening in the moment. So being aware not only of how we're interacting with people, but what do we feel connected with? What is that thing that's getting us excited so that when we're getting out of bed, whether it's a Monday or a Friday, we still feel that energy that we're connected with what we're going in and what we're looking to do. And that's the one thing with the folks who are graduating school now is they want to be connected with something that's true to their core, what they feel is important to them, whether it's a social issue or whether it's a strength that they've developed that they really want to give back because they want to make a difference in the world in some way, shape, or form. So being able to find that connection, it's critical to them.
And so if somebody was out there and they were considering, they're about to find their first job, my experience has been, I remember when I was a kid graduating college at 20 years old, and self-aware was the furthest thing that I think I was at that time. Are there baby steps that people can take? Should they start with maybe a Myers-Briggs? Is meditation part of what you're referring to when you talk about being self-aware?
Yeah, it's a combination of that. There's a gentleman, I agree with you, with either the Myers-Briggs or the DISC, any of those assessment tools which can give you an understanding of where there's a comfort for you in whether it's decision-making, or whether you feel like you have to do your reflection with some time alone. And that doesn't mean that you're introverted and you can't interact with people, but you just need that time to collect your thoughts and get things in order. But there's a gentleman I met a number of years ago and read some of his books. His name is Matthew Kelly, and he refers to it as entering the classroom of silence and really just shining a light on ourselves and just listening. And we live in such a fast-paced world, constantly have information being thrown at us, that if we can carve some of that time out and just separate away from that and just be still, and that could be meditation too. It's funny, I'm at a conference right now, and a session that I just attended before at the end of the day was on emotional intelligence, and the facilitator started out by doing like a five-minute almost like it was a reflection. It was just being quiet and just sitting there in a deep breathing exercise to relax. And it was perfect. I mean, a lot of people who were in the room really appreciated that. But we really need to take time to carve that out on a regular basis and do that. What we find is that people who are exhibit the characteristics of success make it part of their daily routine, and it's whether it's in the morning or the afternoon, but they find time to carve that out so that they can have that reflection to better understand what's going on. And in that time, it can be, you know, a little reflection in silence, but it's also reading. There's so many tools and resources out there on the web these days that we can find. It could be listening to TED Talks or finding a YouTube video or something by John Maxwell or Tony Robbins where they talk about stuff that can really help us better understand ourselves. And the same thing in the career search. There's one site that I work with a lot when I'm working with individuals who are either looking for their first opportunity or who are in transition. It's called Quint Careers. there's just so much information out there. So that's another source that we can really find some tools to help us.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful for people to have these tools. Just today, I was talking to one of my dear clients and friends who completed recently a class herself. She's an executive at a company and completed a class on teaching herself how to meditate and how to facilitate meditation. And she noticed something in her personal life where she was starting to get a little bit antsy and need attention from someone in her personal life. And when she reflected on it and took a moment to be self-aware, she was able to ascertain that she could actually provide that attention, that something that she was looking for outside of herself, to herself, and then not disrupt or create an unhealthy, unbalanced relationship with this personal person in her life. And I think the same is true of our offices, is so often we act out. I just led a class on this actually 2 weeks ago in Chicago to a bunch of executives from around the country. And we were talking about when you have somebody who's acting out, it doesn't matter whether it's an executive like a Harvey Weinstein or a employee at the company, oftentimes you have somebody who wants attention. Now, obviously, the way Harvey Weinstein did, that's a whole other ball of wax. And that was, you know, again, completely unethical. And it's so sad that somebody like him could grow to such prominence in Hollywood. And yet it's only now just coming out. I diverged for a moment just because it's been big on my mind. I was reading numerous articles about that. So let me go back to the point I was trying to make. The point I was trying to make was in business, if we can just notice that we need attention from somebody, whether it's good or bad attention, maybe we want to be recognized for something we contributed to the team. Or I know myself, I used to act out a lot when I was fresh out of college and didn't know any better. And I just wanted my bosses to acknowledge me or pay attention to me. And in that situation, it didn't get me what I wanted. But if we can learn to give ourselves the attention by spending that quiet time alone in reflection and becoming self-aware, then we no longer have to look externally for that validation that I think can oftentimes disrupt our lives, both personally and professionally. Did that make sense? I totally diverged there for a moment.
No, it does. And I think that's where the self-awareness and the self-management comes into place, that by doing that, you begin to understand more about yourself. The other thing, too, is that if you surround yourself with a circle of people who are good at being honest and giving you good feedback, that's helpful as well. Here's the great news. Earlier this year, Gallup, they do a lot of research work, and they published a white paper, and it talked about what organizations need moving forward to be successful. And one of the key skills that they noted was that organizations, managers, supervisors, leaders, all have to develop a coaching skill, because coaching is going to be critical to the success of organizations moving forward. So that means it's got to get pushed down to different levels of an organization, and people who, once they begin to develop those skills, and the beauty of coaching is it's all asking questions from a space of non-judgment. And the idea is to help somebody else ask the question for somebody to potentially discover for themselves where the opportunity lies. So to your point, yes, we have to own it. We have to step back and take that time to develop it and reflect, but organizations are also seeing that it's a worthwhile investment for them to get the most out of the talent within their organization too.
Yeah, I think it's something my own office and I noticed. There was an upset in my office about something that was misunderstood. And our knee-jerk reaction, I think, as human beings, no matter what generation you're from, is to get upset before we get curious. And just last week, we actually had Katie Bennett on the show, and we were talking about coaching and how important it is to get curious before you get upset. And I think when we ask questions and we dig in a little bit deeper, sometimes we gain a broader perspective rather than getting defensive or upset or reactive right away. The more that we have facts and information, the more that we're able to move forward and make offensive, proactive, responsive choices rather than being reactive and animalistic, which I think is what happens so often to all of us, is we just get in this position where, especially between managers and employees, you know, either side can be very easily reactive because it's not a balanced relationship. One side has more power than the other side, which is how we get into these situations where people can abuse their power in any way, shape, or form.
Yes, but that's another area where I think organizations are beginning to understand that, yes, somebody may have the title of leader or manager, but servant leadership is something that's important. Somebody who is in that role is really should be looking at it from what can I do to help you be successful and to begin to put everybody on the same playing field. Because whether we're leaders or we're in a different role, we all have our areas of opportunity. And if we recognize that, and you know, Patrick Lencioni, who wrote the book, Five Dysfunctions of the Team, talks about this a lot. The ability to be vulnerable and let everybody know where that, you know, hey, we've got some things that we've got to work on. That helps to build functional teams. It leads to more healthy conflict within an organization, and it builds trust because people then begin to see that, hey, it's not just me. Somebody else has got things to work on, and I see that they're trying to do it. And yeah, maybe that conversation didn't go as well as we had hoped, but there was a respect for one another that we learned from it. We apologize, we move forward from it, or we've walked away with how we can potentially do things different in a meeting, things of that nature. And I think that as we begin to move forward, and we're doing great stuff with it now, I think we're going to begin to see organizations focusing on more of that, so that, to your point, yeah, there's probably always going to be some of that, but the successful organizations, you're going to figure out a way to manage that. So that there's that respect for the work of an individual, regardless of where they are on the organizational chart.
Yeah, I think it's so important. I mean, it's what I'm a proponent of in my own company is we all treat each other as equals. And it was something early on that I learned when I used to manage, I would say my employees, and I didn't even realize I would say it. And my husband's like, you don't own them. They are not your employees. And so I shifted the context and started to say my colleagues, because that's really at the end of the day what we are, no matter what capacity, whether you're the manager, the owner, the newest person on the team. I think it creates a little bit more camaraderie and a sense of community when you see one another as colleagues rather than seeing people at different levels, if that makes sense.
It does. About a year ago, we had a presenter come to our HR chapter, and he did a presentation. His name was Doug Kirkpatrick, and he did a presentation on what if we fired all the managers. And it was about an organization out in California, and really all they do is grow tomatoes. But the tomatoes that they grow, then sell them. And so everything that we use, tomato sauce, you know, any other product that you could think of that would have tomatoes in it. But the idea was, it was a group of people who made the decision when somebody was brought on board to be hired. And a group of people would give feedback. And then if it came to the point where the person wasn't working out well, it was a consensus as to whether or not the individual was moved off out of the organization. And what I found interesting about this was that part of the hiring process was every candidate who came in had to write their own personal mission statement. And it was used as part of the hiring process to determine whether or not there was alignment with what the company's mission statement was. So it is trying to get that equal playing field where everybody is more on a collaborative team basis. And again, you know, there have to be people who make those ultimate decisions and such, but wherever it can be done more on a collaborative basis, that's great. And that's the trends we see too. You know, there's a lot of open space environments that are out there, but it's team-based work. And even if it's folks who may be working on teams remotely, there has to be that ability to work well together, collaborate, and the other trend that we start to see is that they're bringing people back into an office environment a little more frequently, because people who are stepping into the workforce now, they're used to doing stuff hands-on and with groups, whether they were doing it in school or whatever volunteer work they may be doing. But they want to keep that connection. That connection is very important. So I think we're going to begin to see some more of that, even though working remotely, especially if we're working with global teams and whatnot, will be there. But the ability to physically be present with everybody, I think that's going to be something that's going to be important moving forward.
So it sounds like the people who are graduating now, a couple of the things that they might want to work on, you said they want to become self-aware. I know we touched lightly on emotional intelligence, and you said you just came from a session on that. And I know EI is becoming the hot new topic and trend in the career and workforce space right now. And then something that you touched on but skimmed over and I wanted to bring back to is, I think you had mentioned to me that one of the big attributes that is necessary for graduates coming out of school right now is learning compassion and empathy, which ties into what we were just saying about leadership, about there are leaders in every level of an organization, whether you're a vice president or a CEO or somebody just helping move a process along. You could be a leader in many different capacities, and many of the grads that are coming out of school could one day be a leader of a Fortune 500 organization or a leader of their own business. So how would you say that people could go about developing more empathy and compassion? It's that fine line where you don't want to allow people to walk all over you, but at the same time, you touched on being authentic and vulnerable, which are things and characteristics that I think people relate to.
Yes. So the empathy piece is, it's really being able to put ourselves in the other person's shoes and understand perhaps, well, we won't know directly what's going on, but just better be connected with, hey, there's a different perspective that, of how I got to look at this situation when I'm dealing with an issue, and making sure that we take that into account and not make irrational decisions just based on our own lens of how we're seeing things. So the more that we can connect with people at that level, I think it helps organizations. It's a skill that it can be learned. So so if somebody feels that they don't have it, you can certainly work on it either just by stepping back and looking at experiences that you went through and just saying, well, what's another way I could have looked at that situation? Or asking people who you trust what they can tell you about what how you handled it and what you should have been doing differently or could have been doing differently. But being just aware of divergent viewpoints, you know, we live in such a diverse society. I actually had a discussion with a client a week or so ago, and we were talking about different training that they were doing. And one of the things that they had taken upon themselves was, it was a pretty diverse organization, so they organized workshops within the organization to make people aware of the different groups that they have. They had a workshop for LGBT. They had a workshop for women of color in the workplace. They had another one for transvestites in the workplace. So they're making it known in their culture that these people exist, they bring value to our organization, and we want to be respectful and understand that, you know, despite what their characteristics may be, we want to create an environment where everybody, there's a sense of belonging. And we see that with LinkedIn. Her name is Pat Waters, I believe. She's the chief people officer there. And that's part of what her mission is to create a culture of belonging for everybody. But back to the empathy piece, yeah, so here's an example where to be empathetic. This is a story. It's my wife and I have her cousin asked her to be godmother for their son. His name is Perry Sherman. He's actually an actor, and he was in a traveling show for Les Mis, and he was up in Toronto, and we had a chance to go visit him. When we got there, he wasn't feeling well. We're sitting there with him in his apartment, and the production stage manager sends him an email and basically lays it out to him and says, this gentleman's name is John Gray. He actually changed his name to the John Gray because there's so many people with the name of John Gray. But he said, Terry, here's the pros and the cons. I'd love for you to come and work to do your part tonight, but I understand that you're recovering. Tomorrow you've got two shows. And at the end, he laid out the pros and the cons and enabled him to make the decision on his own. about whether or not he wanted to come. But the empathy piece was, you make the decision. I understand you want to do this, but I'm also wanting you to know that I'll respect it, and there's no judgment if you decide to stay home and rest another day, because I really want you to fully recover. So as an HR professional, I'm sitting and I'm listening to this. I'm going, this is really interesting, the way somebody has this caliber to handle the situation and let this individual make the decision on his own. So we started talking more about him, and he said, yeah, this gentleman worked his way up from the stagehand to a production stage manager. And he said, at the end, every show, he'll get on the speaker and he'll tell the group, and he'll go, you folks were wonderful tonight. Your moves were crisp. Your lines were clear. You beat the City of Toronto crowd. And he said, at the end of it, he said, you know, every night we listen for this to see what he's got to say. And he said, you know, sometimes it sounds kind of corny. And I'm saying to myself, but you remembered it. And to me, that's empathy. The compassion is there, the caring in that particular situation, but then just the going out of the way each and every day to show somebody what they're doing right and pointing it out for them. I think that's, to me, a great example of summarizing empathy.
Yeah, I think that's a great lesson for any of us out there over anywhere around the world who might oversee or manage or set an example for others, because there's one, my sister's an animal trainer, and she says you're better off to reward positive or reward good behavior and not punish bad behavior. Because I think as managers and leaders, I know when I was brought up, it's like if you see somebody doing something wrong, you call them out on it, you make sure they know they're wrong, and then you tell them what a crappy job they did. Well, clearly, that doesn't work well as a parent, as a professional, or anything, nor does it create happy human beings. And it was only about 5 or 10 years into my professional career that somebody brought it to my attention. And my sister and I talked about it from an animal training standpoint, that you will get much more the behavior you want by rewarding good behavior rather than punishing bad behavior.
I agree. I always say that, you know, I don't think anybody gets out of bed in the morning with the intent of going and doing something wrong. And if we just step back and we recognize that, and there's a lot of stress on folks, a lot of companies are running at warp speed and trying to get a lot done. Yet at the end of the day, the people who are working in organizations, they are the most critical asset to an organization. And if you don't have them aligned, if they don't feel that they're respected, or if they feel like they're continually working under stress, like, if I make a mistake, I'm going to get held accountable for it publicly or whatever, they're not going to do their best. So we have to figure out ways to put them in a position to succeed. Now, if it reaches the point where it's not working, well, there's a dignified way to go through that process, either to potentially find another opportunity for the individual within the organization, or to have those transparent discussions with people and to say, hey, it's not working out. Here's what we can potentially do to help you move on to your next opportunity. And here's the tools and the resources we could potentially provide to you so that you can be successful. And it's critical for organizations to begin realizing this, because to your point, the way it was when we probably both of us entered the workforce earlier on in our career, there's greater stakes now. And when I say that, I mean this. People have the venues to go out on social media to places like Glassdoor and talk about their experiences with organizations. So we would think that, you know, you would be one, and organizations would want to be true to their mission statement and values. But if that aside, they have to realize that their brand is going to take an impact, not only for potential other people to come and join it, but the public begins to see that. And sometimes it can have an impact on whether or not they want to do business with those organizations, whether it's business to consumer or business to business, because sometimes people leave organizations and go work with another one, and then they're in an influencing position to decide whether they want to continue working with a former organization.
Yeah, I think it's so important. And it ties into what you were talking about earlier, which is one of the other things I think you had mentioned was a critical component of finding your dream job is the mission statement. I love that example you gave of the tomato company and how people wrote their own mission statements. Tell me a little bit about how somebody might go about writing their own mission statement or setting a goal for themselves if they're a recent grad or looking to transition into a new job or a new career. What would you suggest somebody does in order to approach that?
Well, it's a process that it's almost like a living document, because for years, personally, I walked around with all these thoughts in my head and I never committed it to paper. And then when I finally went to this coaching school, I was aligned with a coach, and they asked me, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to write my personal mission statement. I just really want to get this on paper. So we walked through the process, and there's some tools. Stephen Covey has a tool that's out there, his website, that it can walk you through and find the steps that to build that. But it's really just the best question is, when you reach your 80th birthday and you look back at your life, what is it that you want to say that you accomplished? What would you like to be your legacy? And what are those things that are really important to you? And then you really just kind of align them all and put them out there, and then take the time to just keep looking at it and measuring it and getting it down to a point where you have it almost like fulfilled in a sentence or two. And then figure out the values that are most important to you as well. And the values really can be anywhere from 3 to 5, the things that matter most to you, whether it's respect, whether it's being connected with, you want to have fun through life, but it could be a spiritual piece that's important to you. But committing it to paper, Word documents are great because you can continue to play with it. And then just go back and forth and asking yourself, all right, so how do I want to be remembered as far as what I do in my professional life? What do I want my family to remember about me? What about the people who are close to me outside my family? And then just take those sentences and keep blending them until you come to a point where you've got a sentence or two that really aligns with what you want your mission to be. And then use that as your guidepost. And it's interesting because you'll recalibrate it over the course of time. Something that's perhaps important to you in your early 20s, that may change a little bit when you get into, you know, your 30s or something like that. And that's fine. But as long as it's helping you to fulfill your journey and how you go through life, I think that's the most important thing.
I think that's so important. And I know one other thing that people might not be able to wrap their heads around is there's one thing where you could have a value, but it's another thing entirely to embody that value. You might have a value of integrity, but unless you're living your life as an integral person, then you're not embodying that thing that you value. And I've personally seen this happen both for my friends and for my professional colleagues, where somebody will say that they have X or Y value and that it's important to them, but how they live their life is counter to that. And so they keep getting that thing that's counter rather than what they really say they're committed to. Does that make sense?
It does. And that's why sometimes when we get done, not sometimes, but I think when you get done with it, if you share it with the people who matter the most with you, then you're making it public and you're giving them the opportunity to hold you accountable to it. And that accountability, because we often do this in the corporate world when there's employee relations issues, we'll often go in, we'll have a discussion, or we'll coach some of the people we're dealing with to say, well, bring that person in and ask them, how in the behavior that you just exhibited, how are you honoring the value of integrity within this organization? Or, hey, help me understand with that situation that you just went through. I know respect is important to you, but how did you honor respect with the manner in which you went through that situation with your colleague in the office? In fact, I'm doing that right now with a couple of clients where we're talking about this and how it's potentially impacting situations that have been allowed to go on for extended periods of time. And then now it's reaching the point where it's a culmination because there's a lot of frustration by a number of individuals. And it's important for people to look at that and say, and if people are true to what they're writing down, there's got to be a struggle between the chamber in your head and your mind and your heart, because if that's a true value for you and you're not exhibiting it. And then again, the things we talked about earlier in the discussion, if you go back to that reflection, that entering the classroom of silence, and to think about how you've done and you handle things, you should be able to talk yourself through. And I think that's too where it's helpful to journal, to see what things are contributing to that. Then perhaps we can look at, you know, what are we going to do? What are the things that are causing you to get to that point where it's creating that disconnect? What are the symptoms that you have to look at, and can you address them, or do we have to figure out ways to alleviate yourself being put in that position so it doesn't trigger that response or that reaction as opposed to a conscious response of how you're going to handle a particular situation?
You just touched on an important topic that obviously is all over the news today, globally as well as locally, which is respect. If there were somebody out there listening, and be it male or female, no matter what the circumstances, and say that they felt, let's say, disrespected, and let's call it, it was a sexual way that they felt disrespected just because of what's happening in the news. I know I didn't know any better. When I was a kid and I started off and I got my first jobs, I was so afraid of making a misstep or doing something wrong that I probably wouldn't have had my wits about me had I had somebody approach me in an inappropriate way, the way some of these people are coming out and saying. What would your advice be to somebody who's starting their career, again, male, female, no matter what circumstance they're in, and they get some sort of disrespectful or unwanted attention? What would be your advice to somebody in that position?
That's a great question. In what we do professionally with Insperity and even colleagues of mine who are in other HR positions, it's always important to bring it up right away. And if it's somebody who you report to directly, hopefully the organization has checks and balances. They have a harassment prevention policy, discrimination harassment prevention policy that outlines what your options are to bring those types of situations to the attention of somebody within the organization who can address it. I would say that it's always better to find that person who's in the decision-making role that can address it, whether it's an organization that's large enough to have a human resource professional, or some organizations have a hotline number where you can call and speak to someone and file a complaint about what's going on. But you have to bring it to somebody's attention. If you're in an organization that doesn't offer you that, then that's where you have to step back and ask yourself, okay, is this an organization that I really want to stay and work with? Because if that's the culture and it's being exhibited by people who are in the key leadership roles, if we don't think it's going to change and we're going to feel uncomfortable doing that, working there every day, and we may have to change organizations. But hopefully, because this is something that is really spoke about on a regular basis in a lot of organizations, and it's in the news a lot, hopefully there is a process where people have the multiple options to go and speak to somebody and have the matter addressed. And it's, you know, it's funny, earlier this month, there was Derek Jeter, who's the former baseball player, just was with an ownership group that bought the Marlins baseball team down in Florida. And they said in their opening statement that they're going to create an organization of respect and one that's going to be very involved in the community. So when you start making public statements like that, There's a sense of accountability that you're going to follow through and do that. If organizations have that value, then it's important to live it. I think just if you're in an interview process with an organization that you're considering to join, to step back and say, if that's one of the values, say, Can you give me an example of how respect is lived in this organization, and let them start to explain to you in the interview process what it's like, even if you're going to be working for a manager. So help me understand how conflict is handled, so you get an idea if it's handled in a respectful manner and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I mean, again, where were you when I was approaching my first jobs? Because these are all helpful tips. So it sounds like most of what you're saying that are the critical skills to finding your job, whether it's a career transition or you're about to pursue your first job out of college, it's about emotional intelligence, being self-aware, developing empathy and compassion, creating a mission statement, and then following up and basically setting your goals, right?
Yes, and finding someone who can work with, who can hold you accountable, or who you can speak with and can coach you and mentor you through that process. You want to build yourself a good circle of individuals that can keep you motivated, and who you can also express when you're having your doubts and your sense of discomfort about what's going on. So you can talk it through to make sure that, there's perhaps another way to look at it, or they can keep you motivated and keep you on course.
Yeah, I think that's so key, is just finding people who can be good mentors and hold you accountable in an organization that, you, as you said, thrives on respect. And I think that's such a great point to leave today's show off on, is it's important, no matter what level you're at in your career, to always garner and foster respect in any organization. And I thank you so much. And I respect you quite a bit, Michael. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing all this valuable advice with our listeners today.
Jennifer, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion with you.
Yeah, it's been such a joy to have you on. And tune in next week. We have Tracy Jones joining us for your non-dream job survival guide. So what to do when you're not in your dream job. Tune in next week at 4 p.m. As always, you can catch the show live on LA Talk Radio. Or if you miss any portion of the show, you can go back to the LA Talk Radio archive section of the website and find the archives of any shows that you may have missed, or download the show later in the week on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. As always, we invite you to find us on Facebook under Get Yourself the Job. Share with us thoughts or questions you might have for our guests. And thank you always for tuning in and for your support. And thank you again, Michael, for joining us today.
Thanks again, Jennifer.
All right, take care.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.